On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Ted Cruz wrapping the bacon around the semi-automatic weapon to cook it.
I understand that trade is not a sexy issue.
Nobody knows where the Republican Party is going to land. I mean, it's kind of like a country road. No one knows where it will end.
In many ways, Marco Rubio is the Michael Jordan of American politics.
I'm Warren Olney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page. Warren Olney back with Which Way LA. The state law that developers fear most is California's Environmental Quality Act, abbreviated CEQA. Environmentalists often cite it when they go into court to challenge proposed projects. The result is often expensive litigation, sometimes court decisions. Last week, the state Supreme Court issued a ruling on CEQA itself, limiting the scope of the California Environmental Quality Act. Sean Hecht is co-executive director of UCLA's Emmett Institute on Climate Change and the Environment. Thanks for joining us.
Nice to be with you, Warren.
So did this court decision finally decide the issue of CEQA one way or another?
I would not say that it did, actually. So CEQA requires local governments and state agencies to analyze the environmental impacts of their decisions before they make a final decision. And there was a complicated set of questions in this case, but basically the basic question was, to what extent, if there is an impact that brings people to an environmental problem, like putting people in a new development that is exposed to existing pollution, do they have to analyze that? And the court issued kind of a complicated decision on it that doesn't definitively answer the question one way or the other, but presents a lot of things for lawyers to argue over in the near future.
So both sides, though, as I understand it, are claiming a victory.
Well, yes, and I think that speaks to the ambiguity of the court's decision. What the court did is it said, so that the situation here is that we have the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, which is responsible for protecting people's health from air pollution, and they issued a rule that essentially says that when you are trying to get a permit for new development, you have to take into account the pollution that those people will be exposed to and to analyze that. And the building industry said, no, you shouldn't have to do that because the new development isn't responsible for the pollution. But environmentalists said, well, yes, you're exposing people to hazards they weren't exposed to before by building this in harm's way, and it requires analysis. And the court, instead of answering the question directly, really set down some new principles of law that courts are going to have to take back in the future and figure out what to do with. And the way that the court looked at it is it said, well, no, it's not. You don't have to do an analysis in a situation where you're just looking at the existing environmental effects on a project. But you do have to do an analysis if a new project is going to exacerbate impacts that are already there. And so the question will be, what does it mean to exacerbate impacts that are already there? And people will be arguing over that very question in a lot of different contexts.
You begin to understand, as you try to explain this, why environmentalists and developers can get very frustrated with the courts.
Yes, I mean, CEQA has definitely been a controversial statute. It's done a lot of good for the environment over the years. It's required analysis that otherwise wouldn't have been done. It's protected resources that wouldn't have been protected. And at the same time, there are situations where it gets where CEQA issues get litigated and delay projects from being built, and housing developers are sometimes understandably frustrated about the delays that it can create. So there's really a big dispute over whether CEQA does more harm than good. I personally think it does more good than harm, but others feel differently.
Well, we have a terrible shortage of affordable housing here in Southern California. A lot of developments are planned. No doubt CEQA will be raised to challenge some of them. Is this decision going to make any difference?
So I don't think in the long run there's a way to tell yet if this decision will make a difference. I think what's clear is that people in certain vulnerable areas, say the community of Wilmington, which gets a lot of traffic from the port, or the community of Maywood that's affected by industrial activity in Vernon next to it, those kinds of communities are entitled to protection, and I think CEQA will continue to protect them. I think there are other contexts in which it'll be less clear how much CEQA will apply to limit new housing. I think overall, CEQA is not the main culprit for the shortage of housing. It's one of many, many factors that are used, in trying to figure out where to site new housing.
So general rule, as I understand it, if we can come up with one bottom line, is that if the development makes environmental pollution worse then you have to do an evaluation of it. If that's not the claim, if it's just environmental damage that's already there, then you don't.
Yeah, I think that's probably right as the basic principle, but I think there's still a lot of gray area there. Under what circumstances does bringing people to a particular area, to what extent might that have some impact that exacerbates an existing environmental impact? And I think that the contours of the answer to that question are not entirely clear. But I think you stated the basic principle pretty well.
Okay, so the case was decided by a unanimous state Supreme Court, but a lot of other judges are going to be puzzling over it for some time to come, I would take it.
Yes, I think that this gives lower courts some guidance, but doesn't tell them what to do. One of the interesting features of the decision is that it approved of a section of the CEQA guidelines that the governor's office issued many years ago that had been disapproved by certain appellate courts. And at the same time, the Supreme Court's opinion didn't say that it was disapproving of those courts' opinions. So I think it will have lower court judges scratching their heads a little bit and trying to figure out how to make this work in the future.
All right, Sean Hecht, co-executive director, Emmett Institute on Climate Change and Environment at UCLA. Many thanks.
Thanks. Nice to be with you.
In a moment, a new look at medical training on Which Way LA.
Subscribe to the Which Way LA podcast at kcrw.com or download the KCRW app, available anywhere podcasts are found and on all mobile devices.
We're not only back with Which Way LA. The giant HMO Kaiser Permanente has a history of bucking the healthcare establishment by snapping up new technology and encouraging physicians with different specialties to work together. Now it's planning its own medical school to train a new generation of doctors who look like the patients in communities where they serve. Chad Herhune covers healthcare for the LA Times. Chad, good to have you on our program.
Thanks for having me back.
What does that mean, that they're supposed to look like the patients in the communities where they serve?
That's one motivating factor behind this new medical school. There's several, but certainly when you talk to Kaiser, kind of twofold. They want to recruit more minority students in the medical school and also just teach all the students who are training to be doctors to be able to treat this increasingly diverse population we have both in California and across the country. So kind of attacking it from both directions.
Why have they chosen Southern California as a place for this school?
Well, Southern California is a huge market for them. If you look at Kaiser, they do have 10 million patients around the country, but about 80% of them are in California, and a huge chunk of those are in Southern California, and so it's just an important market that they're already in. They have a lot of hospitals and clinics and doctors here already, so they can use those facilities. The medical school, we don't know exactly where it'll be located, but likely it could be near some of their existing facilities. They could use some of that expertise and facilities they already have.
So are they necessarily then training doctors to graduate into the Kaiser system?
It'll be both. I mean, certainly some of these people will be snapped up by Kaiser. They've already been trained in their way of coordinated care, heavy on technology, evidence-based medicine. So, yeah, this really serves their own purposes because they keep growing. They need a steady supply of physicians, and they've almost trained them already from the get-go. But they're under no obligation, these students, to stay with Kaiser. They could go work anywhere. And to some degree, I think Kaiser also finds that appealing. They can kind of spread their message across the country through these newly minted doctors.
And another interesting thing about this, as I understand it, is that rather than emphasizing classroom instruction, this is supposed to be hands-on education. What does that mean?
Yeah, some other medical schools have already tried to do this, just try to get out of the textbooks a little earlier and the basic science and get them out, working as emergency medical technicians out in the field, seeing and touching patients right away, get more real-world application of their knowledge, get an idea of working more with other doctors and nurses, kind of this team approach, not just being a siloed doctor with a lot of knowledge just from the textbooks.
Will they get then less science in the classroom?
No, I mean, I think Kaiser, this medical school, will be, they'll get accreditation. They'll be following all the rules. These students will learn everything they need to. I think Kaiser just wants to accelerate that real-life application, hoping maybe it sticks a little more and they're ready to hit the ground running.
Chad Heryun again, healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Dr. George Thibault is president of the Josiah Macy Jr. Foundation. That's an organization that focuses on improving the education and training of healthcare professionals. Good to have you on our program.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Is this the way the medical profession is going?
Well, there's a lot of change going on in healthcare delivery, as everybody knows. And education needs to change in parallel with it. And those changes are happening. So a lot is going on in new medical schools. Kaiser follows 15 other new medical schools that have opened in the last 7 years. And it is one of several places now proposing a new medical school. And existing medical schools are changing too. So this is part of a trend of change. And Kaiser is part of that trend.
And before we go further, there is predicted to be a shortage of physicians, or there has been. Will these new medical schools, including the one by Kaiser, which I think is scheduled to open in 2019, be able to make up for whatever differences exist?
Well, there's still a lot of controversy about whether we have a shortage of physicians, absolutely, or not. We certainly have a maldistribution of physicians, both geographically and by specialty. The new medical schools are partly addressing that because they're interested in meeting regional needs. But as the earlier interviewee said, the students will be free to go any place they want. They're not necessarily producing students just for Southern California.
Will there be less emphasis on specialties and more on primary care, even though specialties pay so much better?
Well, that's, of course, one of our big problems. We have a higher percentage of specialists in our healthcare system than in other systems in the world that are regarded as highly functioning and more efficient systems. And we do reward our specialists greater. Whether Kaiser will be able to change that trend or not remains to be seen. There'll still be a small number in the total number of physicians being produced every year. So it'll take more than just a Kaiser to change that trend. But if students have good experiences in primary care and see good primary care practiced and see the pleasures and professional satisfaction from primary care, we think that can at least partially overcome the other stimuli which have driven more students to choose subspecialty choices. But other changes will be needed, too, in both the quality of life in primary care as well as the reimbursement for it.
Let me introduce Daniel Zangali. He's Senior Vice President for the California Endowment. Good to have you on our show.
Thank you, Warren. Good to be back.
You're concerned, as I understand it, with the relationship between healthcare professionals, physicians obviously primarily included, and the communities they serve. Tell us about that and what you know about the plans of Kaiser Permanente.
Well, one of the positive things about Kaiser, including their vision, I think, for this medical school, is that they increasingly understand that when healthcare is more community-based and more community-informed, it tends to focus more on prevention. People are more interested in staying well than they are in being treated once they get sick. So that has been a driver in terms of some of Kaiser's positive health outcomes, and we think that's going to be an underlying principle for this medical school. If you train doctors to believe in community-based health, to believe in prevention, you're going to get better health results. Kaiser has been demonstrating that in many ways. This is taking that to another level, we think.
Dr. Thibault, isn't that a major change from the way that the medical system has traditionally operated prevention as opposed to fixing people when they get sick?
It is a major change, and it's one that we encourage. That, as well as team-based care, is another major change. And Kaiser is a good model for team-based collaborative practice, and we believe that that should be taught in all of our schools and in our training programs. So we applaud that.
So, Mr. Zingale, you spent some time with the CEO of Kaiser. It's his ambitions, I take it, that are being fulfilled here. What did you learn from him, and what do you anticipate from Kaiser's new project?
I did get a chance to sit down with Bernard Tyson on Friday, and I was impressed with how they've really thought through this vision. And, for example, one thing I didn't know is he was very excited about how he thinks they can set a better standard for care for transgendered people. That's a new area of understanding for many people in the healthcare professions. He sounded very serious about helping through this medical school train doctors to be better prepared for an area that really has been too little understood by the medical profession.
What's the role of the California Endowment in all this?
Well, we've been our focus has really been on expanding access under Obamacare. So several million Californians now have coverage who didn't before. That has resulted in more access as well, not just coverage on paper, but by far more kids are getting vaccinated. So access is improved, but there are problems in terms of availability of providers, especially in certain regions. So we need an influx of new and better trained, not just physicians, but also nurse practitioners, physician assistants. We're going to need a new cadre of people to meet the demands of that access and to do it in a way that delivers better quality of care.
Where in California is the access most limited, and what can be done about it?
Well, rural California is the hardest hit by the access problem, and so we have to figure out ways to provide incentives for people pursuing healthcare professions to go to those areas or return to those areas. So we can do that through scholarships. We can do it through training. I hope this medical school will look for ways to get people to go to the areas where we need them most. Rural California tops that list, but also communities that have cultural and linguistic barriers to care. So if English is not your first language, or if you're from a culture which is newer to California, it's harder for you to get culturally appropriate care, the kind of care that actually addresses the needs of your family, your community.
Dr. Thibault, back to you. How different are the medical needs of people from one culture to another, or one neighborhood, or one ethnic group to another?
They are significant, and that's an important part of what the educational process needs to undertake, to be able to teach this cultural competence and to be able to have had clinical experiences that are in a variety of settings. That's why we think more of the education and training should be moving out of the acute care setting into the communities where the people providing care understand better what the social determinants of health are for the people in those communities, and also understand better what the services available are that often extend beyond the direct health care system, but have an important impact on the lives of the people being cared for.
Let me go back to our first guest, Chad Terhune, the healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Have there been people who have shown concern about Kaiser itself, about the model that it has established? Not everybody is necessarily happy with it as an HMO.
Yeah, some patients aren't always happy. They find it difficult to get the care they need. I mean, it's a very highly structured, rigid at times HMO. Sometimes when you need certain specialty care or see certain specialists, or maybe you need to get outside of the Kaiser system for an expert they don't have, some people have had difficulties with that, and there's always some lawsuits from patients who feel they've been unfairly denied care. So there are those critics. So when you have the idea of a medical school kind of espousing their way of doing things, the first idea for some is they're going to be emphasizing too much cost control at the expense of patients. When you kind of step back and look at ratings from Medicare, from patient safety advocates, other outside experts. Kaiser almost always gets very high marks compared to other health insurers, hospitals, physician practices. So on overall, they do very well, but there's always going to be complaints of patients feeling they hit barriers or they get denied care.
Dr. Thibault, once again, focusing on the improvement of education and training of healthcare professionals, are you concerned about this, given the focus on cost in general with the medical system in the United States in general? Is there a danger of going too far the other way and denying care because of cost reasons?
Well, there's always that danger, of course. But we do believe that we need to be preparing our future physicians and other health professionals to understand health economics and to understand the systems of care in which they're working. So we applaud closer links between education and healthcare delivery systems. Several other of the new medical schools that have opened in the last few years do represent partnerships between healthcare delivery systems and academic institutions. And we think that these closer relationships will have a healthy bidirectional feedback. That is, the healthcare delivery systems need to take greater responsibility for education, and the education needs to be informed by what's going on in the healthcare delivery system. So these are not, we should, I hope, less and less think of these as two different worlds. The goal of both the education system and the delivery system is the improved health of the public. And education and delivery system should be working together to accomplish that goal of improved health of the public.
And Daniel Zingali, back to you with the California Endowment. Dr. Thibault used the phrase cultural competence. I take it that's something that's very important to you.
It is. And whether you're advocating for people from different cultures or any patients, one of the things that we've discovering, and Kaiser has helped really, I think, lead the way, is that spending more is not necessarily better for our health. As a patient advocate, I spent many years really operating under the assumption that my job was to get more resources for patient care in order to get better results. But in fact, what we've discovered is virtually all of the other developed countries that spend less on health than we do get better results. So there is not actually a correlation between spending more and better health results. What you need to do is spend the money right. And that means investing in prevention, investing in a broader understanding of health to include services that promote health on the front end. So again, I think this is mostly good news for patients in California if Kaiser is going to apply that principle of prevention and community-based health now in a medical school setting.
All right. Again, Kaiser Permanente planning to build a new medical school in Southern California. We don't know exactly where. We don't know exactly when, but it's a great opportunity to talk about the healthcare system in general. And I thank you all for being with us. Daniel Zingali with the California Endowment, thanks to you. Thanks to Dr. George Thibault with the Josiah Macy Jr. Foundation and Chad Terhune with the LA Times. Good to have you all.
Thank you.
Remember, you can join the conversation on our Which Way LA Facebook page. In a moment, the U.S. and Cuba, what's changed and what hasn't on To the Point.